Hey, how are you? Can you guys hear me?
Yeah, I'm just gonna put you on the screen so the people in class can see you who are here physically.
You got it. Thank you so much. I'm going to put on another light here. Hello, everyone. Alan, what's going on? Nice to see you.
How's it going?
I'm good, thank God. Nice to see everyone. This is such
I
an
was
honor.
impressed by our blood donation.
Is that unbelievable? 93 pints.
That was amazing.
It's unbelievable. That's 276 lives.
And I will just Yashikoak for Justin, he gave for the first time.
Wow, thank
Justin,
you.
I didn't realize that was your first time.
And
Wow.
he survived. Double platelet.
That's unbelievable.
Yeah, they only had to turn me upside down for a few minutes.
I want you to know that you're in very good company because Jill, my wife, this is like the fourth year in a row. She gives fine, and then all of a sudden afterwards, she's like a mess. But thank God she's okay. Who's there? Who's there in person there? Ilya? Wait, and who is that? Is Diane? Excellent. And who? There's someone else there. Who's walking by with a coat over there? Oh, that was Jay Brody. Okay, good. Anyone else in person? Just the two of you guys. Pleasure. Okay, I'm sorry that I'm not there in person. I've had this very. I'm going to be totally transparent with everyone here. Well, it's not really a big deal. I've had this. I had a kidney stone in September. Okay, I'm going to tell you about my physical ailments a little. Has anyone here had a have a kidney stone? You did, Howard. Okay, good. Howard and I are closer in age. Okay, so I had a Art and
It's
you'll
as close as a mammal get to having a baby.
that's exactly what it felt like. So I had a beautiful baby boy. I called it a boy. I still have it. And
the
then like I'm not exaggerating, like 10 days ago, I start feeling that same terrible pain sensation, almost in the same area, but a little different. And then it started moving to the front. So I'm like, I went to my this new urologist that I found. He's really wonderful. I'd love to recommend him to everybody. And love sharing this. I go there and he says to me, looks like you got another one. But you know, let's just see if it'll pass on its own. Don't do a CT, and I don't want to expose you to unnecessary radiation. But I'm almost 100%. It's another kidney stone. I'm like, great. Okay. So last 10 days, I'm like, I'm on pain medication. I'm drinking like a camel, trying to get this thing out of me. Maybe I'll have a girl this time, you know? And I get back the CT scan today, and it's clear. There's no kidney stone, but I'm still in pain. And then I got this little thing, this little red mark on my side. I take a picture. I send it to my regular doctor. And he's like, Mark, you have shingles. You don't have a kidney stone. Those are shingles. Yeah, so that's what I got. So that's I literally found this out 3 hours ago. And I said, I don't even know what it means. Did you have chicken pox when you were a kid? I'm feeling really good now because I'm on pain medication. I was not smiling the rest of the day. But the doctor said I should not go in for a week because I am contagious. But I want to make it clear, I do not have COVID and I'm not contagious because of COVID. I have shingles. So that's it. That's all I have to share. Class is done. We're finished. I was going to talk about cosmetic surgery, but who needs to now?
They do have a vaccination for shingles.
I know that. What you have to do is the doctor said you have to get over it, wait a year, and then you get the shot.
Good luck.
How long did it take you to get over it, Howard?
Oh, 3 or 4 days.
Okay, fine. Okay. That's
But
good.
I
All
was
right.
on vacation in California when I got it, so it
Okay,
ruined
let's
my whole
all go around.
vacation.
Would anyone else like to share any physical ailments and problems? Just in general. That's a nice way. Jonathan, I didn't know you had a dog.
I do have a dog. Her name is Muttek.
Oh, Mutt, like sweet? Mutt, oh, what a nice name for a dog. Okay. All right. And can Ilya and Diana, I just want to give you guys a huge thumbs up for coming in person. Can you hear me okay? You can. Excellent. Okay, great. Everyone else okay here? Carly and wait, Carly, did you end up coming in person or no?
I didn't. Nate was working up until like 2 minutes ago. So
okay. He's coming. Rabbi Pinney, you're all in for a treat tonight because after we're done, you got a little break and then Rabbi Pinney is going to be teaching. So that should be really great. And hello, Jacob. Nice to see you again, Jacob. How are you? Devra, I hope you're well, Devra. And Daphne, Jamie, Kaylee and Serge, you guys are all with us. If it's possible to show your faces, it makes it so much easier to teach and to be connected, if it's at all possible. I'm not going to do what my kids' schools require them to do. They have to be like in front. They have to show their faces. By the way, does everyone else see the light, the beam of light coming out from my head? That is because I'm an extremely holy and special person. Only certain rabbis merit this. It actually says this, that when Moshe came down from Har Sinai, he had a Karen Or coming from his face. Let me see if I can. It's just this light in the back of my thing. That's why some people to this day believe that Jews have horns. Do you know that? That's where it comes from. Because the Hebrew term for the light is Karen, which can be mistranslated as a horn. And that's why they thought Jews had horns, because they said Moses had a light coming out of him, but they thought he had a horn coming out of him. Okay, there you learned something already. All right. Welcome, Shoshana. How are you? Good to see you.
Good, thanks.
I want you to know I was very, very impressed with everyone's homework. Let's just review real quickly. Let's look at the last homework. I love the way you guys get your homeworks in like 30 seconds before class starts, some of you. But I don't care because you got it in. And that's all that matters.
What if you don't do it?
Oh, are you kidding? There are very serious repercussions to this. First of all, no good, decent university will ever accept you. You probably will never be able to land a position in any decent firm in the city. Okay.
I'll cram all my homeworks in one tomorrow, I promise.
Oh, Alan. And Alan is my mentee, and that makes me look pretty bad.
No. But okay, I did study the Parsha this week.
Okay.
Good one.
Nice. Doesn't make up for it, but nice. All right, hold on. Let's see if I can get one, because I know I read last week. All right, we're going to take Carly. The basis for Moshe Feinstein's permitting the surgery to save baby B, but ultimately terminate baby A, was Rodef. Rodef means pursuer. A Rodef is essentially defined as a pursuer. The context this law is typically referred to is a baby in utero, if it's putting the mother's life at risk, and its life, the fetus, depends on the mother, good, but could kill her, you're permitted to terminate the fetus to save the mother only if the head is not yet shown, meaning it is not yet an independent being. Rav Moshe Feinstein used this argument to permit the operation by declaring baby A a rodef to baby B, as they shared a six-chambered heart. Baby B had a full four-chambered heart, and baby A was dependent on baby B's blood supply to live. However, there was not enough blood flow to keep both alive. Baby E was weakening and threatening life of baby B, and it did not have independence. It was dependent on baby A. Therefore, it was a permissible procedure. Excellent. Does everyone understand this? That all makes sense. Now, the reason I share that with you is not because the purpose of fellowship is for all of... Hello, Amy. I didn't even say hello to you. Hello, Amy. How are you? And Daphne?
Hello.
Hello, hello, hello. Tamar, how are you? And Lawrence,
I'm good.
On, and Erica is on also. Let me show me your beautiful faces, guys. It's much, much better. This is very impressive. We got a lot of people here. Okay. Again, shout out to Ilya and to Diana in person. I'm going to keep giving that to you guys. Kol hakavod. So this is extremely important, not because I want you guys to be medical experts, but why did I do this? And I'm going to continue tonight with another example or two, because I'm trying to show how we use oral tradition teachings to answer real live questions. That's the whole point of this. The whole point is so that we can all see the dynamics of halachic application to real life. That's the whole goal. Does that make sense? So, for example, also, what sources did we use last week? What sources did we use last week to arrive? What sources did Rav Moshe Feinstein point to arrive at that decision that are really important oral Torah sources?
The Mishnah.
Mishnah, good. Amy, what's the Mishnah?
Is it the discussions from the Talmud, the recorded
discussions? So the Mishnah starts the Talmud, basically. The Mishnah is just basically black letter law. And then the Talmud, which was written over the next 300 years, was the elaboration, discussion, application of the laws of the Mishnah. So just think about like law A, law B, law C. Mishnayot are not so as interesting to study. It's the Talmud's analysis of the laws in the Mishnah that really sort of brings the whole thing alive. And that's kind of what we're doing in our classes here now as well. Does that make sense? What else did, what other oral sources did we use besides the Mishnah?
Maimonides.
We did Maimonides. And what was after the Mishnah before Maimonides?
The Talmud, Gemara.
The Talmud, good. Now, just so you don't get confused, and hello, Katie, and say hello to you. Hope your baby's good. So the Talmud and Gemara are one and the same. They're just different words for the same thing. So we went, we brought the Mishnah. Remember what the Mishnah said? I actually have it here. The Mishnah said that you can abort a fetus if it's threatening the life of the mother in utero, as long as the head hasn't appeared. Then the Talmud asks a question that must be because it's rodef. And if it's rodef, what does it matter? If the head is inside the mother, the head has appeared already. And then the Talmud gives these answers. Heaven is the pursuer. And then someone else mentioned a third source after the Talmud. Who was that? One single rabbi?
That was me, Maimonides.
Excellent. Now, what did Maimonides do? What was he known for doing in terms of carrying on the Talmudic tradition? Who knows? What did Maimonides do? He lived in the 1100s, 1200s. Very, very important, which is why he gets quoted so often. Not just because he was a great philosopher and great physician, but he was the first one to do what?
To like compile it all into it like chapters.
Compile it. Wait, who else was saying something else? Who else?
Write it down.
So write it down. It was already written down with the Mishnah.
He codified it.
But he codevra. Good. And Katie was saying he codified. What does that mean to codify? Has anyone here ever studied Talmud? Raise your hand if you study any Talmud. Okay, Jonathan did a little. Artem, Serge, you study a little Talmud. Artem, I think you mentioned to me you did a little. So Talmud, can you actually get the answer to the question in the Talmud?
You can get lots of answers.
You get lots of answers. Can you get the answer? Like, what do I do, Rabbi? My milk spoon just dropped into the pot of meat cholent. What do I do with the spoon, and can I eat the cholent? What do you do? Do you open up a Talmud to the answer to that question?
No. You look in Maimonides or Shulchan Aruch.
Good. Thank you, Jonathan. You look in Maimonides was the first codifier, meaning he went through the whole Talmud, and he took all the opinions, decided amongst the majority opinion, and therefore what we do, and then classified it, organized it in a very, very specific way. The Shulchan Aruch came a few hundred years later, was just a more universally accepted version of what Maimonides did. Shulchan Aruch was written in the 1500s by Rav Yosef Cairo. I'm going to keep throwing these terms around until you guys become experts in all of this, because then you're going to become... you're going to really understand what it is to analyze any issue and subject it to the oral tradition's understanding of the Torah. Okay? Now, I want to take a new one with you. Turn to page, your handout. You guys have the handout? We're going to talk a little about cosmetic surgery. Not because anyone here has ever performed cosmetic surgery. Maybe you have. Maybe you're considering it. Maybe you're not. Someone actually just called me a month ago and asked me whether it was permissible for her son actually to have a nose job. I don't know how else to call it. And it was a religious woman, and she wanted to know. Her son is very, very self-conscious.
Rhinoplasty.
What is it called? Rhinoplasty?
Yeah.
Okay, that's thank you. He's very, very self-conscious. He's like a kid in high school, like 11th or 12th grade. And, you know, he could live without it, but would prefer to do it. Is there any halachic problem or issue? Now, before you look inside, can anyone suggest a problem for this? And let's not limit this to an rhinoplasty. Is it rhinoplast or rhinoplasty?
Plasty.
Plasty, okay.
You're not allowed to name yourself?
Okay, good. So, wait, who just said that?
Jonathan.
Jonathan, okay. You're not permitted to do anything to harm yourself. Did you know that? So, like, if you're in a really awful mood and you just want to bang your head against the wall until you start bruising yourself, but believe it or not, that's a very serious prohibition from the Torah. You're not permitted to do that to someone else, but you're not permitted to do it to yourself. You're not permitted to create what's called a mum, a blemish on yourself. And I think I touched on this last week. You know, we look at our bodies as really a gift on loan from the Almighty, and we have to consult the Torah as to how to utilize the gift. Somebody gives you a gift and they say, here are the keys to the Maserati, but here's the way you need to use it, you know, and we try to keep to that. Okay, good. So any other issue that would come up? So take a look. Yeah, go ahead.
I have a question.
Yeah, Daphne.
Yeah, so would the only exception be if, let's say, you need to do plastic surgery to save your life, in the sense, let's say your nose collapsed for some strange reason. I don't know how, but that happened to you and you need to have rhinoplasty.
Of course. So that's not even a question. And I guess maybe I should have made this clear. I appreciate you bringing it up. That if something is either a life-threatening situation or not even a life-threatening situation, let's say somebody has a deviated septum and it's causing breathing problems, or they have sleep apnea and that can cause all sorts of issues, and the only way to rectify it is to put yourself under the knife, then we do that all the time. But that's not considered elective surgery. That is trying to fix a medical ailment. And then it actually becomes a mitzvah. The question before us is something like a nose job, which is more for aesthetic purposes, or it could be any other kind of change in one's body that medical science is now able to perform safely. You know, they have this thing, it came out years ago, what do they do? They do something so you don't need glasses or even, what's it, guys, help me out with the eyes?
LASIK surgery.
There you go. Right, so let's say you can wear glasses just fine. Are you allowed to subject yourself? So that's the question before us. But anything, let's just get this out of the way. Anything that's a bikuach nefesh, which means life-threatening situation, or a question of life, or it's not even life-threatening, but it's going to make you healthier. You know, my son, I remember one of my boys when he was little, he had his adenoids removed. And I think the doctor at the time said he needed his tonsils out and it would be better if his adenoids are removed too, but it's not necessary, but it'll improve his this and that and the other. So I didn't have to call a rabbi or look it up and say, is that okay? Because it's improving your medical health. And anything that really improves your medical health, as long as it's safe. You know, we talked about last week, you know, are you required to do this for someone else? Like somebody needs a kidney. I don't know if you're necessarily required. It is a mitzvah, though, to give blood. And as it becomes more, I guess, less and less safe, then you get into this cost-benefit analysis of how important is it to the other person? How much of a risk is it to you? But let's go back to us for a minute. Take a look at page 12, source number one. Jonathan, since you made the suggestion, why don't you read source number one? Somehow your box moved. Oh, okay.
I had to step away. Sorry. Someone else read.
let's get somebody else. Who else would like to read? We got a volunteer. Anyone
I'll
here?
Do it.
Thank you.
Page number one, Deuteronomy 4:15.
Yeah.
And guard your souls very carefully, for you saw no figure on the day Hashem spoke to you from out of the fire.
Right. So, v'nishmartem od l'nafshoteichem, guard your souls very carefully. And look at the next one. Read from Joshua.
And guard your souls very carefully to love Hashem, your God.
Now, it's interesting that the Torah is using soul to refer to the physical body, but you may have actually heard these verses uttered by rabbis that are trying to get people to wear masks and follow the laws of social distancing. And you know, there hasn't been enough compliance in the Orthodox community. I'm not getting into that right now. We can talk about that if you would like, but a number of rabbis have brought this verse up. V'nishmartem me'od. It's one of the only times it says in the Torah, me'od, a lot. You shall be very careful when it comes to guarding your body. And look at the next verse. Katie, you want to continue?
Mm-hmm.
Exodus chapter 15, verse 26.
And he said, if you will surely listen to the voice of Hashem, your God, and do what is right in his eyes, when you will listen to his commandments and guard all his precepts, then all the illness that I put on Egypt, I will not put on you, for I am Hashem, your healer.
Okay, excellent. Now, these are other sources. Now, turn to the next page. We are now have the biblical source. We've got some physicians on here. You'll appreciate this. I'm just going to read from the Shulchan Aruch. It's source number 4 on the top of page 13. You guys all with me? Hey, Brooke, I didn't even say hello to you. How are you? Do you have it over there on page 13 on top?
It says it's number 10. I don't see a number 4.
Oh, I mean, it may not say, it may be cut off. It says Code of Jewish Law.
No, hold on.
My packet just skipped from 11 to
13. Yeah, 11. I also have.
Yeah, same.
And
mine says Babylonian Talmud.
It looks like we don't have page 12. It goes directly from 11 to 13.
Well, this is 13.
It's page 15, I think.
What does it say? What's the first words on top?
It's Babylon Talmud Shabbat 50b. No?
Rabbi Wild. Oh, no.
That's where the plastic surgery part is, on the bottom.
I don't know what you're reading here.
I mean, same on page 13, where it says, in my opinion, there are ramifications of this regarding plastic surgery that doctors are currently performing on many people.
Where are you? Where, what page?
Page 13, after the Hebrew. It's like number 10, number 11, Rabbi Eliezer.
Does everyone have what Alan just said?
Yes.
Okay, is Zahava online here? I just want to make sure, because she did this packet. All right, whatever, it's fine. All right, so there's a couple of other sources before we get to that page. Does it say 14 on top, Alan?
No, it says page 13 as far as what I have. There's no page 14. It just goes from 13 to 15.
I'm going to post the specific pages in the chat.
Okay.
I was trying to say that. So just whoever has read, and I'll post it now.
Okay. So it looks like we're missing page 12 and page 14.
No, well, 13 also, no?
13 we have. That's what I just read.
But that's 14 in mine for some. Well, maybe it's a different. All right, let me just see. How do I open this up in the chat? Is that the link to the source packet? Let's see.
I think that's the one where it's missing. She's going to post the specific page.
Okay, one second. Just stay with me, guys. Oh, it's 11. Oh, it's a little different. Okay. So you had 11 there. And then it's missing a whole page. Yeah, I understand. All right. I mean, it's not a big deal. I can I want to be able to see you guys. How do you do this? Hello?
We're here still.
Oh, you guys are here. Okay, good. All right. Okay, so a couple of other sources here. So the Torah basically gave permission to the physician to heal. And this is a religious precept, and it's included within the category of saving a life. And by the way, if a doctor withholds his or her services, it's akin actually to taking the life. Because there's a verse in the Torah that says, "Lo tamid al dam re'echa," you're not permitted to stand by idly by. If God forbid you walk by someone lying in a pool of blood and you can save their life, whether you're a doctor or not, you are required to apply yourself and to try to save the other person's life. Okay, so we have all of these sources. There is Maimonides. It's also one last thing before we get to the page that you all have. Maimonides says that it's forbidden for a person to wound himself or to wound a friend. And not only the wounder, but any person who strikes any other individual in an abusive manner violates a negative precept. So that is involved with who now? Who else is involved, let's say, in the nose job or the breast augmentation or whatever kind of cosmetic surgery that's being done? You have who's involved that could be potentially involved in a prohibition?
The surgeon.
The doctor.
Right, so it's not just the patient, it's also the physician here. You remember what happened last week, by the way? I think I mentioned this to you, that a number of the nurses and doctors pulled themselves off the case of the Siamese twins because they were practicing Catholics and they didn't want to get involved in all of the, they were concerned that that they might be doing something against their religion. So we have the same idea. So let's do that sheet right now together. I want to share with you four different opinions when it comes to cosmetic surgery of four different contemporary rabbis. When I say contemporary, that doesn't necessarily mean they're alive. It just means like within our generation, within the last 100 years or so. All right. So where it says Babylonian Talmud, Sanhedrin 84 on top, you guys have that?
Yeah, that one we have. Yes.
Okay, good. So just to follow with me, look at the very last paragraph on that page. I want to give you a quick biography of this rabbi. Has anyone ever studied what's called a tshuva? Responsa. So a shaila is a question. If you call me up and say, Rabbi, I have a shaila for you, that means you have a question. And I'm going to give you a tshuva. I'm going to give you an answer. So for centuries, rabbis have been writing and publishing tshuvot. Halachic decisors will answer questions from their students, usually in the form of a letter, and they will reference all of the sources, and it's a great body of information to learn about a given subject. And what I want to do with you is study three or four tshuvas written by great contemporary rabbis on the issue of cosmetic surgery. And thanks to our friend Rabbi Avi Heller, who translated these tshuvot from the Hebrew so we could actually understand them together. Okay? So Rabbi Elezer Yehuda Waldenberg, look on the bottom of that page, was born in 1917, and he was a member of Israel's Supreme Rabbinical Court and the rabbi of the Shaarei Tzedek Medical Center. Has anyone been to Shaarei Tzedek in Jerusalem? It's like the leading hospital in Yerushalayim. It's a world-renowned hospital. And he was considered the rabbi of this hospital. All the medical ethical issues came to him. He wrote numerous books and articles in all fields of halacha, but he was best known for his medical ethical decisions on issues like fertility, abortion, organ transplantation, euthanasia, autopsy, smoking, cosmetic, light stuff, stuff that, like when people call me for this, like I'm always referring to these other rabbis. It's like above my pay grade kind of thing. So he said the following. His name was Rabbi Elezer Yehuda Waldenberg, and he said the following. In my opinion, actually, would anyone else like to read this? Let's get another volunteer. Alan, go for it, where it says, in my opinion. Let's read with a lot of gusto.
Yep. In my opinion, there are ramifications of this regarding plastic surgery that doctors are currently performing on many people for the sake of beautifying their organs and the like, even where there is no sickness or pain. And there is a good basis to argue that it was not for this reason, that the Torah gives permission to doctors to heal, even if you can call this healing, and is not permitted to allow doctors to hurt you for this purpose, when there is also no permissions for the doctor to perform it. And one should know and believe that there is no designer like our God, and he designed and created every human being in their own form according to his image, and form which is instantiated in him, and there is nothing to be added to or taken away. It is clear that there is no license except when wounding comes to heal to and to return the loss of one's body, but not to wound the body, in order to change it according to their wishes, and to be smarter than the image which is his creator, made in order to renew their youth and to destroy the edict of the king of the world. Moreover, beyond all doubt, it is absolutely forbidden for a person to bring themselves into danger for this. Therefore, it seems that according to Jewish law, as above, it is forbidden for a person to have plastic surgery, and also for the doctor to carry out such a surgery for the sake of beauty and the like.
Okay, so he's pretty straightforward. What's his answer? Yes, no, maybe?
No.
Big fat no. Now, what's the reason he says no? We're going to get to other opinions. Don't get too nervous. You know, if this is a real issue, because there are other rabbis with other opinions, but I want to discuss all the different approaches. What is the main reason he's giving why it's prohibited?
You're putting yourself in harm's way, and then you're also kind of saying that you're better than God who created you.
Right. So that second point you just made is more of a philosophical point. Let's stick right now to the legal. You know, when you analyze an issue halachically, you're really just analyzing not the philosophical implications. You're really analyzing the law. What does Jewish law say about this? So legally, he says it's a problem, because what's the whole permission for a doctor to hurt you? A doctor can only hurt you to heal you.
Right.
So is this considered healing? Now that could be, which is interesting.
Emotional.
Right. So, you know, how much can you take in into consideration emotional factors? Is that healing? Now, this particular rabbi doesn't view that as healing. And he says it's not permitted to allow doctors to hurt you, and there's no permission for the doctor to do it. And that's not what, you can't call that healing, he says. And then he adds in this philosophical point, which is, look what you're doing. You're trying to be smarter than God. God made you this way, for whatever reason, decided your nose should look like this, your arm should look like that, whatever it is. And you want to just sort of like, in order to renew your youth, or you want to change something. That's not what medicine was made for. Okay. Let's go to another point of view.
I'm curious, Rabbi Wilds, and I don't know if maybe this is part of it, but in last week's Parsha, I think there was something about how, like, people didn't age. So, like, no one knew who the father was versus the son, because, like, the old people didn't get old. And that's, like, why people started getting gray hair. I think it was Abraham said to Hashem, like, no one knows the difference. Like, how, and so Hashem was like, okay, so you'll age. Could it also be a prohibition and not, like, Hashem made us age for a reason? And so if you're doing something like a facelift or whatever to like make you look younger, that like people might get confused.
I think, you know, I've never heard that, by the way. I'd have to check that out. I never heard that. That's very interesting. I don't know if there's any, I think that let's just stick to the halachic legal issue. The legal halachic issue is that you're taking a knife to the body and you're harming yourself to heal, you know, to look better. I think if you didn't have the harm to the body, you wouldn't have any controversy. You know what I mean?
Botox and fillers.
Like, right. So
well, there is might that be considered harm to the body though? Because it's
right, so I don't know. I mean, I don't know.
My mom gets Botox for migraines, but she's not right. Getting Botox for wrinkle like prevention, you know? So it's like, what is the cause versus like the risk and the reason for doing it?
But what is involved in Botox? Does Botox actually harm, like, let's say, you know, a nose job, you have to break the nose and reset it. What's involved?
Botox is not permanent. So, like, you get a needle to the face and it helps freeze muscles to kind of prevent wrinkles. I haven't had it, but it's definitely crossed my mind being a real.
Bring that up, Alan. Yeah. But
it's not permanent. So it does, you know, you have to go get Botox like every 3 to 6 months.
But is there a downside? Are there negative side effects?
Not that I know.
Cause nerves, like, cause you're basically like numbing muscles that right. Long term, if you keep getting Botox, you can damage those muscles in your face.
Uh-huh.
So people that get Botox, like lip injections for like, you know, big lips or whatever, there's, like, I don't think that there's a medical, like, reason for that. I think the only reason people would do that is looks.
Let me just stop you, Carly. There doesn't seem to be a prohibition, even though he throws that line in at the end that you're trying to be smarter than God. As long as you're not harming yourself, it doesn't seem to be any halachic legal issue in Torah with trying to look younger or better. It's just a question, do you have to maim yourself? Do you have to harm yourself in order to do it? You hear what I'm saying?
Yeah, yeah.
I don't know, let's say there was some cream and there was no side effects. You know, maybe some people break out in a rash, but there's nothing really serious. And this cream, you rub it on and it just, I don't know, it makes you look much younger, okay? So is there a prohibition in that? I mean, that's what Katie was bringing up, something in the Parsha, but I'm not really aware of any prohibition to, that there's a prohibition because there's harm. If there's no harm, then look younger, why not, you know? Now, there might be philosophical issues like you're not accepting the reality of getting older and you're not being appreciative for the body and the way the body's supposed to age. Okay, so maybe it's not the highest spiritual thing in the world, but is it in a violation of maiming yourself? That's really what the issue is here. You know?
So what if you have some kind of deformity?
All right, I'm going to come to that in a minute, Jonathan. Excellent question. But I want to get to the rabbi that we discussed last week. What was his name? Rabbi Moshe?
Feinstein.
By the way, you might have seen Rav Moshe Feinstein's son just died last week. Rav David Feinstein, who I had the honor of meeting and consulting with. He was the rabbi. He took over his father. We're going to read his tshuva in a minute on cosmetic surgery. He was a lot more liberal when it came to cosmetic surgery than the rabbi we just studied. He actually permitted it, but you'll see why in a minute. But I had a chance to actually meet with his son when we were... I'll talk about it another time. It's quite interesting. MG was very close to buying a church. The building next door to the Jewish Center, that big church. So they had a parish house. They wouldn't sell it. I was trying to get him to sell it, but they offered us a 35-year lease, like a really long-term lease. And I went down to the Lower East Side. I called him for weeks, but he's like very old school. I had to just like go and see him. And he was in Chinatown, I remember. And I went to see him. It was a really beautiful experience. And he permitted it. He said it was okay. I'll tell you quickly as an aside, what's the issue with getting a church and putting a synagogue or putting MGE in a church?
Idol worship and figures that are there that we're not allowed
right,
to.
Right, so we could take down the figures. But there is according to some opinions, Christianity, certain forms of Christianity might have the status of what's called in Hebrew avodah zarah. And the question of idol worship, because they're worshiping Jesus as a physical being. I guess Unitarians probably wouldn't be avodah zarah, but Catholics would. This was a Presbyterian church. I actually went out for coffee with the pastor and grilled him on the theological tenets of Presbyterianism so I could find out what the issues were. And I asked him, I said, do you believe in the Trinity? And I remember him leaning forward and he said, we are Christian, you know, meaning like, of course we believe in the Trinity. The coolest thing is he said to me, we were on Starbucks in 86th Street, and he said, why do you want to move in? Like, why do you need more space? So I started telling him what MGE does. That we reach out to Jews in their 20s and 30s, and they don't know so much about Judaism, but we're learning more about it. And there's a guy sitting at the next table on his laptop, and he leans over and he says, I'm really sorry to listen in to this conversation, but you just described me. Can you tell me a little more about this place, MGE? And then I got him to come. The pastor was like so impressed. We became friendly, but I went down to the Lower East Side, and I asked Rav Feinstein, his son, Rav Moshe Feinstein's son, Rav David Feinstein. And I said, is it a problem with me paying rent to a church? He says, what's the problem? So I said, well, I checked out. They do believe in the Trinity. And now I'm contributing to a organization that subscribes to God being in three different forms. And they're worshiping these physical things here and there. And he's listening. He says, so what's what he says, do you think all, he goes, do you go to the Marriott? You ever stay at the Marriott Hotel? So I said, yeah, I've been at the Marriott a few times. He goes, well, the Mormons own the Marriott. Are you concerned that you're paying money supporting the Mormon church? I said, I didn't know about that. Can I not go to the Marriott now? So he said, no, it's fine to go to the Marriott and it's fine to move into the church, because how do you know that the rent money you're giving them is specifically being used for Avodah Zarah purposes? You know, the church does a lot of good. They feed the homeless. They do a lot of charity work. How do you know maybe the money you're giving them is not going to their worship, but it's going to some of their social programs, which are very important? He was extremely positive, and he gave me 100%. He said, no problem. Then I put a piece of paper in front of him, and I said, can I just ask you to sign this, saying that you permitted this? Because there are going to be a lot of Orthodox rabbis breathing down my neck and wondering who said this was okay. And he took the pen, he put it back to me, and he says, there's no way I'm signing this. He says, you could just tell them we met and I said it was okay. Anyway, that was my meeting with him. Let's go back to cosmetic surgery. So Rav Moshe, take a look at the next page. Do you see where it says Rav Moshe Feinstein on top? Yeah. Okay, Kaylee or Serge, one of you guys want to read?
Go ahead.
Well, find it first.
Oh, it's the next page. It says Rabbi Moshe Feinstein.
What page is it?
I don't even know. On yours, it could be anything. On mine, it's 15. Just look where it says 11 on the side, Rabbi Moshe Feinstein.
We don't have that on page 15. Oh, actually.
If you look at the chat, you'll see in the chat, just click it. Those are the pages Rabbi Wild's talking about. Those are his pages that he has. So if you just
No, I may have a different page, actually.
No, Rabbi Wild's, I put what you sent me just now in the chat. It says these pages.
In the chat?
Okay, I see it.
That you have in front of you.
So page 15, our Rabbi Moshe Feinstein, right?
Yeah, I mean, I thought by now, Serge, you would have memorized it, but it's okay.
Not yet. Okay, it is permitted for a young girl to... Is it permitted for a young girl to beautify herself via surgery, which is bodily damage? Answer, but Maimonides writes, any striking of a normal person of Israel, which is a striking in an abusive manner, and in one version, a degrading manner, see there, and if so, then the fact is that this wounding is done for beauty and is not an abusive or degrading manner. So the prohibition does not apply.
Very, very simple, quick answer. But Moshe said there's no problem. No problem with cosmetic surgery. Why? Because the only prohibition to maim yourself is to maim yourself in a what kind of manner?
Degrading.
Degrading or abusive. He's quoting Maimonides, who codified the Talmudic law and said, yes, you're not permitted to wound yourself or wound someone else. But if the wound, he says, is not being done to abuse, but it's being done to beautify, then the prohibition does not apply. Simple as that. So he said it was okay. Now, he's not telling you to do it. And by the way, when I told you that somebody called me and asked if her son could have this nose job, and I called a rabbi, and he said to me that he met with Rav Moshe on this issue, rabbi on the Upper West Side, was one of my teachers. He said he actually went to see Rav Moshe many, many years ago. He's much older than I, and he sat down. Rav Moshe was very encouraging of it when there's a lot of self-esteem issues involved. And I told him, I said, it's an 11th grade boy. He's very, very self-conscious about his nose, whatever it is. So that's a separate, that's another, you know. And I wanted to share this because I want you to get comfortable with the fact that two rabbis who are operating with the same sources might come out with a completely different conclusion. Okay. Let's go to the next one. Let's see. Jacob, you want to read for us? Can we get you on the next? Do you have that where it's, there's number 12 there?
I don't have it yet. I'm still looking.
Oh, by the way, just
get it from this link.
Well, Jacob is looking. Just so you know, a little biography of these rabbis. I think it's cool to learn about their lives. So Rav Moshe Feinstein says he was born in Russia in 1895. He died in 1986. I actually went to his funeral. I was studying in Israel. I've never been at an event with so many people in my life. And I was at the Siyum HaShas with almost 90,000 people. It was unbelievable. I've never seen so many Jews from so many walks of life. I happened to be studying in yeshiva. They closed all the yeshivas and everybody went. Anyway, he studied and served as a rabbi in Russia until he moved to the United States in 1937. He was the leading halakhic authority of American Jewry, and his responsa, which were widely circulated, are often considered authoritative. Okay, Jacob's going to read for us if he finds it. Another rabbi, his name is Rav Breisch. Take a look at the very bottom paragraph. Rav Mordechai Yaakov Breisch was born in Poland in 1896. He served as the rabbi of a number of communities in Poland and Germany. And in 1934, he fled from the Nazis, settled in Switzerland, where he served as the rabbi of the Jewish community. By the way, my mother, of blessed memory, her family was from Germany, and they left Germany and fled to actually Liechtenstein. I actually went to see where my mother lived in Liechtenstein last summer. It was really beautiful. Has anyone been to Liechtenstein? You have been, really? Serge?
All those countries in the world. Yeah, it's between like... Tiny. Yeah, it's like you can go drive through it in 20, 30 minutes.
Yeah, and they have a king, and they have a little palace. And I have a video of me. I went to the palace, and there was nobody home. I was knocking on the door, and there's just nobody there. It's just like a tiny, tiny little country. But there were actually Jews that left Germany, and they lived in Liechtenstein. My mother was born in Zurich because there was no hospital in Liechtenstein. The closest hospital was in Zurich, and she lived there until they were able to finally get visas to come to the United States. She was, it was just her yard site, actually. But Rav Breisch was a rabbi he was in Switzerland before the war, there were Jews that actually went to Switzerland to escape Nazi Germany. A lot of them ended up coming to America that were able to get out because they thought Hitler was going to invade Switzerland, which he never did. Okay, so let's read what Rav Breisch has to say.
It is permitted.
Is it permitted?
Is it permitted for a young woman to have surgery on her nose to straighten it and beautify it? Answer: in our case, we have both for probably she is embarrassed by her nose to go with her friends, and since in general women are judged by their beauty, if so, then there is no greater pain than this. So it is a clear halachic decision.
Which is really interesting. Two things that I find fascinating about this. He says that there's no greater pain than this. There's no greater pain, meaning he's seeing emotional pain as real pain that would permit, you know, the otherwise what appears to be some sort of prohibition of maiming oneself, because it is healing. It is considered healing because there's no greater pain. And he says something very interesting, because you would think it's like, that he says that women in general are judged by their beauty. Now, maybe you should be fighting against that. I don't know how you feel about that. Like, should women be judged by their beauty? Of course not. Nobody should be judged by the way they look. That's ridiculous. It's discriminatory. But he's saying you can't fight City Hall. That's just, unfortunately, that's the reality. And we could fight it all we want, but she's going to be judged for her beauty, and she's feeling the pain, and therefore it's permissible. I just thought it was an interesting... If anybody wants to weigh in or...
But does that mean it's not permissible for men?
So I asked this rabbi, because men are not as judged for their beauty, or are they?
Women are less shallow.
Women are less shallow. Women are less shallow than men. That is 100% true. But the rabbi I consulted with said that it applies to boys and girls and to men and women, because it's a state of mind. So even if that objective reality isn't true, maybe no one's looking at you or at that person, but they're just super self-conscious, and it's affecting their sense of self. Now, you got to be careful, because, you know, cosmetic surgery can also become addictive. And all of a sudden, you're getting this quick fix to feel better about yourself. And we know that real self-esteem can never be changed by simply changing a part of the body. But if a person has a decent sense of self, but it's affected by this, then perhaps it could be helpful. But if it's a fundamental, and I'm speaking on a purely psychological level, if it's a fundamental issue that a person has with himself, then all of the cosmetic surgery in the world isn't going to change how we feel about ourselves. So it's important to just point that out. We're going to do one more opinion. Turn the page. Do you guys have the next page? Oh, my phone just died. That's not good.
Starts Babylonian Talmud.
Yes. You want to read that? Oh, no, not the Babylonian Talmud. The next one where it says Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach.
Yeah.
You want to just read the bio of this rabbi.
Rabbi Shlomo Zalman Auerbach was born in Jerusalem in 1910. He is recognized as one of the prominent Poskim of his time. Many of his decisions and works related to the halachic problems that arose with introduction of modern technology. At age 22, he published a book, Meorai Eish, that dealt with the problems of electricity and Shabbat. Many of the halachic literature and responses written by other rabbis were based on Rabbi Auerbach's works. His book, The Minchat Shlomo, includes many questions and answers relating to practical topics. He died in 1995.
Yeah, I felt a little of a connection to Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach because one of my rebbeim in Israel, who was considered one of the great minds of the generation, Rav Avigdor Nevensal, he should live and be well. So Rav Nevensal was the chief rabbi of the old city of Jerusalem, and he was the head rabbi in the yeshiva where I studied for many years in Israel. And his chavruta for 40 years was Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach. And he went to his home every day for about 40 years, and they studied Talmud with each other. And he was just considered a very, very scholarly and saintly figure. So let's read. What did he have to say about plastic surgery?
No, I'm going to read that too.
Yeah, please.
Plastic surgery. I will respond to you briefly with my humble opinion that in cases when it is not done for the sake of beauty, but because of pain and the like, i.e. the nose is very deformed from ordinary people and he is embarrassed by it, it is possible to be lenient, for the intention in a different case is only to remove the defect so that he can be like other men. And this is not similar to fixing women. So here too, it is possible to be lenient. But in cases where the intention is just to beautify, it seems to be forbidden. The prohibition of wounding one's body seems to be not applicable when it is a case of repair.
Okay, so this is very interesting. So far, we've had two different opinions, two approaches. One is it's completely inappropriate. It's maiming. It's wrong. That was the first rabbi. The second rabbi, that was, if you remember, Rav Tzvi Waldenberg from Shaarei Tzedek Hospital, and he said you're trying to be smarter than God, and it's prohibited, and it's wrong, and the doctor's wrong for doing it, and the patient's wrong for having it. Rav Moshe Feinstein said it's harming, but it's harming for beauty. It's not harming for abuse, and the only prohibition is harming for abuse. So therefore, it's perfectly permissible. And then we learned by Rav Breisch that because women are judged this way and there's no greater pain, it's also permissible. Here you have like a sort of a middle of approach. And I think Jonathan Edelman asked this or mentioned this before. Is Jonathan still with us?
Yes, I'm still here.
Oh, you're right there. I'm so sorry. So Jonathan mentioned before, what if it's like a sense of a defect or a deformity? So Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach said basically, where it's not being done purely for the sake of beauty, but it's being done because there's a deformity and you're embarrassed because there's a deformity, then you can be lenient. Because the prohibition is only to wound one's body, there's no such prohibition when it's repairing. When it's simply beautifying, it's a problem, but repairing is not a problem. Now, I realize that could get very gray because one person's, you know, one person could look at something and say that's a deformity, but I don't know how you judge that exactly. We'd have to get a little more deep into that. But according to Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach, this last rabbi we're studying on this issue, it would really depend on what is being changed and the nature of the part of the human anatomy that's called into question here. Is it a deformity or just no, it would look better this way? And if it's just a question of looking better and beautifying, that's not good enough. But if it's repairing some aspect, some deformity, then it would be permissible, sort of like a middle approach.
Rabbi, can I ask you a question?
Yeah, please.
So my son had like a deviated septum.
Mm-hmm.
So the doctor said he could fix it, but while he's there, I could also, you know, do some cosmetic beauty on your nose. So,
right.
So I, you know,
so
maybe you fall in between there.
No, I think it sounds, listen, it doesn't sound like that's a problem at all, because the real prohibition, the real potential prohibition, according to Rav Moshe Feinstein, is no prohibition at all because it's not being done in an abusive manner, is the breaking of the nose. So once the nose has been broken, and let's say that needs to be done to fix the deviated septum, I don't know if that's true or not, I'm not a doctor, but if that's already done, and while that's already finished, we can just, you know, do a few other things that don't involve any damage to the body, then why not? You know? I don't know if those extra things that they would do involve any damage. That's the question.
I had a quick question just about LASIK. You mentioned it earlier. Like, I actually did it years ago. And, you know, it's an interesting one because it's not beautifying your appearance, but it's like repairing your eye. But yeah, it's not, like, I'm actually wondering what the take is on that one.
Well, is that only considered a deformity? Or it's a physical deformity?
Yeah, I don't know. That's a really good question you're both asking. I mean, what's involved? They have to like sort of cut into.
There's two lasers. One of the lasers actually cuts your eye. It's a blade. And then the other laser shoots your eye and it changes the shape of your cornea. And that's what actually fixes and repairs your vision. It makes it makes it go back to your brain. Like, so you can actually see it.
Right.
So you're cutting your eye, basically. You're
cutting your eye. Right. But again, Rav Moshe would say it's permissible because, I'm assuming if Rav Moshe said it's okay for beauty, then it would be okay for practical purposes.
Right.
Because why are you doing it? You're not doing it for beauty necessarily. I don't know, maybe you are. Some people do it so they don't have to wear glasses. They don't like the way glasses look on them. But let's say that's not the reason. Let's say your vision could be better. Does it improve your vision, actually?
It's better than even with glasses. Like, it's, you can get better than 20/20 vision.
Yeah, then I don't know if anyone would have an issue here. But because it's not being done for beauty, on the other hand, you are cutting into the eye. But it's making better. Is it any different than, I'm just trying to think, any other kind of elective surgery that people do which makes them healthier?
What if you have glaucoma?
Right. So glaucoma prevents you from seeing properly, and that's rectifying a problem. You know, what Serge is suggesting is that, is there a problem with your eye? Well, yeah, I mean, yeah, there is a problem. You're not seeing as well as you could see. But what's involved is putting you under the, I'd have to check it out, but just based on what we've studied, I don't see why there would be any prohibition involved. You're doing it really to improve your medical health. Seeing better is improving your medical health, no?
Right.
Oh, you could say, what do you mean? You could see just fine. You're not going to be a pilot in the Israeli Air Force, so you don't need to have 20/15 vision. You can have 20/30 vision, and it's just enough, and that way you don't have to go under the... I could see someone maybe arguing the other side. You know, like...
weight loss surgery.
Say again?
Like weight loss surgery, it's like two benefits. It's one for physical, but also for health reasons.
Oh yeah, but everybody knows, you know, that you could really be saving lives.
Right.
And there's less stress on the heart. I mean, correct me, there's a real doctor here. I don't know what I'm talking about, but I think there could be, if the doctor recommends it from a medical point of view. You know, like everything in life is a cost benefit analysis. You have to look at the I remember when I thought I had another kidney stone and I was in the doctor's office, you know, he goes, I don't want to put you, give you unnecessary radiation. I said, well, you know, like, I'm like super busy. If I'm going to have the, like, let's just do it anyway. He says, well, we don't need to do it now. So I said, well, he goes, but if you're in pain for another couple of days and come back. And I'm like, but then why is it okay to do it then? He goes, because then, you know, then it shows you might have something else. And then everything is a cost benefit analysis, you know?
So
any questions from, okay, go ahead, Artem, you want to ask something, please.
I just wanted to clarify the weight loss question.
Yeah.
And the plastic surgery question, just really quickly. Weight loss definitely has been shown to improve outcomes, decreases rates of diabetes, things like that. There's actually like substantial benefit to it. In regards to the question of kind of having plastic surgery when you're like, if your nose is broken and then he's going to do something else. So any plastic surgery actually involves like cutting of the skin and tissue and rearranging of it. So I don't know if that changes the conversation at all. Because, you know, if you're going to have, you know, your nose broken and fixed, that's one thing. But then if you're going to have more on top of that, that involves further damage to the body.
Okay, so that, thank you for clarifying that. So I'm clearly not up on what's involved in a rhinoplasty, what did you call it, right? So if it involves further manipulation, cutting into the tissue, then a question needs to be asked. Again, I just asked this of a rabbi who consulted with Rav Moshe Feinstein himself, and he said it was permissible. So there is leeway for this, clearly. But there are other rabbis, as we read this evening, who disagree. But again, I just wanted everyone to understand that's what's going on. They're all operating with the same verse in the Torah, which we read when we first started this. And you shall guard your soul very carefully. And by the way, that is the verse that is held into question. If we don't, the reason I'm not teaching in person and with Ilya and Diana in person, I keep giving them shout outs, is because my doctor told me that I'm contagious, and that would be a violation of this particular verse in the Torah. So we have to be very, very careful when it comes to physical health. That's why we violate any prohibition in the Torah, with the exception of the big three, but under very limited circumstances. When if there's a question of a life-threatening situation and observing another mitzvah, like if the only way to save your life is to eat non-kosher food, you eat the non-kosher food. If the only way to preserve life is to break the Shabbat, I remember our first child, my wife went into labor after all the company left Friday night dinner, her water broke and we had to go to the hospital. And first of all, it was only appropriate that she would wait for the company to leave, because that's our job as outreach rabbinic couple, is to serve Jews food. And so it's least you can do is just hold off until the company, literally dessert was over. We benched, people left. I go downstairs. It's a true story. I went downstairs and I wasn't really sure what was going on. She seemed like okay. Couldn't tell if the water broke. It was like a very, so I asked a friend, my friend was like at the concierge. I said, do me a favor, call this number. My doctor, just describe the symptoms to, and I didn't have to do that. I could have picked up the phone myself, but I was friends with a guy and I just said, do me, and he called the doctor and he told the symptoms. And I remember the concierge guy, his name was John. He says, the doctor says that you should come to the hospital now. And I said, oh, okay. And then I was about to go. He said, and get in a cab, Rabbi, don't walk. That's what he said, because he knew where I lived. She delivered at Lenox Hill. It was fine. And it was on Shabbos, and that becomes a mitzvah. And I'll tell you something else is really interesting. The Rambam, Maimonides, says that when you're in that situation where you have to violate the Shabbos to save a life, you don't start giving it away to somebody else. In fact, Maimonides writes, the greatest rabbi of the community should violate the Shabbos to teach the lesson. And I'll tell you another story where this actually happened. So 3 years later, that same boy who came into the world on Shabbos, he's now 23, okay, a long time ago. He was playing around. He was 3 years or 4 years old. He was little. He was playing around with one of those stanchions on the third floor of the Jewish Center. And my wife kept pulling him away and he kept going back and it was just like a shiny thing. And he kept playing until finally came crashing down on his head. And it was like, oh, it was bad. And I grabbed him and it was just not a good situation. And I yelled to the person standing next to me, call Hatzala. Hatzala is the volunteer ambulance service. And I didn't realize I yelled into the ear of the senior rabbi of the shul, who was my mentor and teacher, Rabbi Dr. Jacob J. Schachter. And he ran downstairs, ran into the middle of the street with his talis on Shabbos, started hailing a cab because he thought he could get us to Mount Sinai faster than Hatzala. And I'll never forget that vision of Rabbi Schachter. It was one of the great rabbis of a generation, hailing a cab on West 86th Street and getting me and my son into a cab so we can go to the hospital. And when I came back and he had some stitches, he was fine, thank God. I showed the rabbi the Rambam. I mean, he knew the Rambam. It was a famous Rambam. I said, we did it. It says you shouldn't give it away to anyone. You should let the greatest scholar in the community violate the Shabbos to teach the lesson to everyone. So, and by the way, I'll tell you something else. I'm sorry to keep going off here. What time is it? It's 9:11. Okay. One other thing is, do you know when the last world epidemic during, I'm going to mispronounce this, chloria, C-H-L-O-R-E-A.
Cholera.
So Rabbi Yisrael Misalant was one of the great ethic. This was in Poland. He got up on Yom Kippur and made Kiddush on Yom Kippur night because the rabbis were telling everyone to eat on Yom Kippur because if they would get, if they would get this thing, they needed to be in good health and their bodies in a good immune, their immune systems working properly in order to fight this. So they told everyone, and to make sure that everyone do this, they made Kiddush Friday, they made Kiddush on Kol Nidre night on Yom Kippur to be able to do this. All right, so I got a lot of stories like that, but these are all applications. We have...
I have one question.
Please.
How do you, like, they're differing opinions here. So, like, how do you decide which to go with? Like,
so you don't. You go to your rabbi, and that's why it says in the Pirkei Avot, in the Ethics of Our Fathers, Aselach Harav, you're supposed to make for yourself a rabbi, because you don't have to be that brilliant to figure out Rabbi A is very strict on this, I'll stay away from him, I'll go to the other rabbi. And that other rabbi is very strict on this, I'll stay away from him on that, I'll go to the other rabbi. You know, you have to try to be consistent by following one rabbi as often as possible. Now, sometimes you might go to a specialist, like a rabbi that, you know, specializes in medical ethics, you know, like what we've been discussing. But you don't want to do what they call in law school forum shopping, looking around for like, this one's lenient here, this one's lenient there. But it is expected that sometimes you might choose another rabbi because they might be a little more erudite in a particular area. Yeah. Does that answer your question?
Yeah. Thanks.
Now, by the way, what's the ideal? The ideal is, and you'll all be able to do this when fellowship's over. Maybe not for everything, but the ideal is answer the question yourself. Because if you study enough on a given area, you talk to the doctors, you figure out the medical realities, and then you study the relevant passages in the Talmud, in the Mishnah, in the Talmud, in Maimonides, and you analyze the biblical verse through the eyes and the lens of this oral tradition, and you can do that yourself, you don't need to ask questions anymore. You answer the question yourself. Now you're like, oh, Rabbi, that's very nice. I can't really do it. The truth is you can. The more, and that's the goal. The goal is to become your own rabbi and not simply always have to rely on someone to know what to do. Now, there'll always be some areas I'm calling rabbis, and I've been a rabbi for, I don't know, over 25 years, and I've been calling others because I don't know. I haven't mastered every part of every area of Jewish law. Actually, what I want to discuss with you next week is something that I'm a lot more equipped to answer because I'm an attorney by training and I studied a lot of comparative law. So next week, we're going to talk about the fugitive, protecting Jews or promoting justice, which is a very, very big issue we're going to use, and some other examples as well. What is next week's date? It's not Erev Thanksgiving next week, is it?
It is, yeah.
Oh, it is?
Yeah. It's the 25th next week.
Hold on a second. I didn't realize that. Okay, so next week I'm going to do two things. We're going to talk a little about protecting Jews or promoting justice. This was actually quite interesting. When I was in law school, I interned in the extradition department in the Israeli government. And our department was charged with extraditing Jews accused of committing crimes abroad. It became a very controversial thing split a lot of communities because you're not allowed to really technically send a fellow Jew back to another country. But if they were accused of a crime and there's a system of due process, we're going to talk a little about that. And we're going to discuss Thanksgiving. Is there a problem celebrating Thanksgiving? Now you'd be like, what? Now I'm just telling you now, in case you missed the class, you can eat turkey and celebrate Thanksgiving. But I want to go through some of the sources that talk about Thanksgiving. And one of the things we're going to learn together is the history of Thanksgiving. because not enough of us know the history of Thanksgiving. All you do is eat turkey and cranberry sauce and scream and yell at your families, and you don't really even know what it's all about. I know what's going on in most American households, and it's just awful. It's terrible. And we're going to fix it next week by understanding what Thanksgiving is and then subjecting it to the question, is it creating a new holiday? I thought holidays had to be Jewish, or is there a problem? And does that apply to Halloween? Does that apply to New Year's? We wouldn't celebrate Christmas, but Christmas has become super commercialized. It's kind of devoid of religious meaning to a lot of people. So maybe I can do Christmas too. Why can't I schlep a tree home now and put it next to my menorah? So we're going to talk about all that. And again, the point of this is not to necessarily become an expert in all these areas, but to use interesting questions, contemporary questions, to flesh out how the oral tradition got developed and how we get from Sinai to Manhattan. Make sense? Okay. I think next week is technically an optional class in case you need to prepare for Thanksgiving. But I got to tell you, that's lame, because who's preparing for Thanksgiving? I don't know. Just come on Zoom if you can't come in person. But we're going to be having class next week, and I hope you can join us. And if you can't, we're taping everything and recording everything anyway. But I thank you guys for listening. Please know that this Shabbat, Rabbi Kevin and Alson are going to be running services, FNL, Friday Night Lights on the Roof of the Jewish Center. We're back at Amsterdam Burger Saturday morning, as we were. We're not in Amsterdam Burger. We're in front of Amsterdam Burger. We figured out how to get those heaters working. It's supposed to be much warmer than it is now because it's freezing now, but it's going to be warm enough, supposed to hit 60, so it'll be warm enough to pray outside. We're staying outside as much as we possibly can. We want to be safe. Stay socially distant. Things are, you know what's going on. I don't have to tell you. So just hang in there and stay safe. And pray for my refuah shleima from this wonderful little thing I'm dealing with. But I thank you for your concern. And all
thank
that.
You, Rabbi. Refuah shleima.
Too. Amen. Amen. Thank you, guys.
Rabbi.
It's a pleasure. Better, Rabbi. So stay on. Stay on, right? I'm going to leave you, which is very sad. I'm going to leave you, and Rabbi Pinney's going to come on. Cool?
You're better, Rabbi.
Thank you so much. Wait, does that mean Rabbi Pinney is still teaching? Is that why is he not on? He should be on. Zahava, are you with us here?
Yes, he's still teaching. He'll come. He'll come.
Oh, he'll be on? Okay. Would you, do a little tap dancing, sing some songs?
I'm actually preparing the stuff for your Tanya class, so.
Okay.
Hope you could hold off starting your Tanya class for a minute.
Well, I'm going to go into it and I'll, okay. Oh, you're putting it on. Okay, guys, so take like a 5-minute break, but don't, you know, and those of you in person, Diane and Ilya. Yeah. Diane, you can hear me all right?
Yeah, we can
hear you. Rabbi Lawrence is also there. There's some other people in the background.
Oh, they're there? Lawrence is there. He's sitting where he sat last week in the corner.
Yeah.
I believe it. You don't have to show me.
Hi.
Nice. Can you see me?
Yeah, I think you can see.
It was really interesting. I love learning about cosmetic surgery because I wanted to do Botox in the future.
All right. Thank you for being there in poison, as they say. Awesome. All right. I'm going to jump on the other thing, but stay on for Rabbi Pinney's class. He's amazing. All right. Wait, if I leave, it doesn't cut anyone else off, right? Right, Zahava. Okay, good. Okay. Good night, everyone.
You say funny things. Look at that. How are you doing, Diane? Good?
I had the craziest day today. I'm doing well, thank you.
Is it good life or bad?
Extremely busy.
Thank you.
All right. How you doing?
Oh, hi.
How many people are here live?
How many people? Three
other ones. Three? Okay. Three? Okay. What's your name again?
Ariel.
Ariel?
Pleasure.
My first time teaching you guys. I'm very excited. Okay, so let's turn. I'm gonna turn this way. Oh, how am I? I can't. Oh, this is. Hold on. Hold on. Zahava?
Yes.
Are there sheets?
They're on the table that's in the room.
Okay, great. Thank you.
No problem.
I'm just switching it around.
Oh my gosh, what a surprise
to
hear this time. So
different. Okay, let's try to. Hey, how are you? What's your name again?
Diane.
Diane, I'm Rabbi Penny Rosenthal. Pleasure. Okay. This is not really.
You need to have this whole.
Let's see how this is going.
I can barely manage you, but you get any crew.
No problem. Okay, everybody. Guys, we're going to start in a minute. We're just going to get everybody in. Who are the girls? Come on, everyone, begin.
Yeah,
begin. You're here. Get some food. Let's do it.
All right.
What's your name?
Ilya.
Ilya, pleasure.
Nice to meet you.
I'm Rabbi Penny. Here we go.
Okay. Let's do this.
Let's do this.
I like
your energy. Yeah, we're doing this. That's it. Who's our number three here? We got three people live.
Oh, we have four people.
Four,
all right. We're going to get to this. All right. Can I request that the people who are in Zoom land actually put on their cameras? Because I have not taught you, and I'd like to actually see your, as they say, your Shane upon him. Thank you. Good to see Brooke. Alan, good to see you. Katie. Welcome. Carly, Harlan, Artem, Jacob, Jonathan, Edelman, pleasure. Kaylee, you got Shoshana Levitt. We're going to put you guys on. All right, tomorrow. All right, seen somebody. All right, very Kaylee, how are you? I'm sorry, I'm wearing the mask because, you know, we got to be careful about the basic rule of Judaism. We take our health and well-being very important and very seriously. So we're you take care of that. How you doing? What's your name?
Lawrence.
Lawrence, pleasure.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you. All right. We are going to begin.
Rabbi Penny, I am here. This is Deborah. I just have my video off because I have a concussion at the moment and I'm supposed to avoid screens.
That is like the best excuse. I love that, but I'm sure it's true. I'm just saying.
It is true.
Deborah, we have a relationship of trust already. Don't you worry. All right. Well, first of all, I want to say, Refuah Shleima, you should have a speedy recovery. And the fact that you have a concussion and you're coming to class anyways, you get extra credit for that. All right. Does everybody have a sheet? Everybody get a sheet? There's a sheet over here.
And fellows, this is in the email that I sent you today, so you could turn your email.
Awesome. Okay. First of all, things you got to know about my teaching style, which will be very self-evident. First of all, I always show a video clip in all my classes because I like using the video clips, and we're going to get into that. Oh, we're also live on Facebook. Oh boy, that's no stress. Okay.
Hey, Rabbi Finney.
Hey, Jonathan. Welcome. Good to see you.